Hello, everyone. It is the 20th day of the 2018 October. My name is Icefraud. I'm here to talk to you about Dota on a show called Bottle Crew Reborn because they had to make it again because they fucked up the previous one. With me is Surge.
Orange, glad to see him, everybody. It is me, Surge, bringing you another episode of Bottle Crew Reborn here. It's been a while here for us, I guess, Icefraud.
You know, it really has. I've missed it. I've missed reaching out to my people because they've missed me, and I only miss them because they miss me. Listen, I'm hard to get.
That's your prerogative, I guess. I'm here, I guess. Yeah, it was an enjoyable experience last time as well. But I'm mainly here because I heard you riled up the hornet's nest a little. There's some beef going on that I'm not fully aware of coming into this. I was just told I needed to come on, and I'm not busy right now. I was just, sitting here, had the window open, listening to the sound of the trees rustle, and then they shone my surge signal in the sky, and I am here, and I am ready to kick some logic into you, which is what I expect you'll be needing.
You know, Surge, it's been a while since we've done a collaborative brainstorming of a patch. We just haven't been as much contact lately, ever since my brother locked me in a room with no Wi-Fi. But I brought some ideas, and I'm ready to talk about the future of Dota 2 as I see it.
All right. I mean, that's what I'm here for. Hit me.
So I have a couple of categories. I have general game changes. I have a few new items, not very many, and then I have a new hero for you. What would you like to hear about first?
Wow. Let's start with the changes, I guess. We'll go broad and then we can dial down into things like the heroes.
So the first thing I was thinking about is how drafting is stupid and boring, right?
I'm not going to agree, but proceed.
I think we could make drafting a lot more interesting if there were more elements to consider, which is why I'm introducing multiclassing to Dota 2. If you wish, instead of choosing talent tree points, you can spend those points to obtain skill points in your teammates' spells.
So you get a talent. You get one of their spells. You can't, upgrade one of their spells.
Not for them, no. You could be a witch doctor and take a rank in blur instead of taking a point in your talent tree.
Yep. I get that.
No ults, though. That would be obviously OP.
Let's think. Oh, no ults. Okay, that's fair. How balanced of you, I guess. Yeah, sure. I'm down with it.
I can't imagine any way that this would break the game, so I think we're okay.
No, not at all. I mean, just giving, was it four, possibly four other spells? I guess you might run out of hotkey. Mm. I mean, I use legacy hotkeys because I played Dota 1, all of the cool people. So I might be doing some sort of finger acrobatics, but that might be okay.
You know, I think we're ready to debut the new Dota keyboard. Actually, since you mentioned it, it's just two keyboards, but it's two layers, you're playing a organ.
You know, I wonder why we haven't had it, because I have foot pedals, so those old Hammond organs. Of course, growing up as a Godek, you had to learn the piano. It was very important that you studied piano classically. And then I kind of branched out from there into the organ, and then I was playing the Hammond organ one day, and I was it would be really nice if I could just use these feet of mine for something else. And so I actually sawed the bottom half off of an organ and I hooked it up to my computer. And I mean, even just having hotkeys to scroll through Excel or, go to certain places in my spreadsheets, it's really useful. I would highly recommend it. I can try to find you one.
That's interesting. I think I will pursue this idea. It is interesting. I don't have a lot of experience playing the organ. In the Ice family, we all played mouth harmonica. As opposed to the other type of harmonica.
Verifying.
Yeah, no, if you're not an expert, you don't know the hand harmonica.
I'm not well-versed in the... No.
It's sort of how you can make the farting sound with your hands.
I've never been able to do that, actually.
Oh. Well, it's you play the harmonica that way. It doesn't sound very good. Most people, it's not very popular. The mouth harmonica is much more popular. Anyway, I have a much better idea than multiclassing.
Okay.
I have alternate victory conditions, because let's face it, sometimes destroying the enemy's ancient just isn't very viable.
It's honestly one of my least favorite parts of the game, I guess, if I was going to just, you know, kind of try to be objective, not be emotional, be more logical, especially against certain heroes. It's very bad to try to take their ancient.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree.
You know, I think I was going to lead with the other victory condition, but I think I'll lead with this one, because I think given the way you play, Dota, you often find yourself on teams where you're the best player in the game, right?
Of course.
So I have an alternate victory condition. I have two of them, and one of them is called Team Please. If you can successfully convince the enemy team that you're playing 1v9, your main account is 6k, and this is all Crystal Maiden's fault, noob mid, the enemy team can vote that you and you alone should win the game and receive 5 times the normal MMR.
This is stupid, and it's perfect. I can't tell you how many times I've had a fucking Crystal Maiden on my team who just does not understand, like, how to pull. Or that you should pull. I mean, she could have so many levels if she just went to the jungle instead of sapping my experience. And it's this way every time I don't play support. Because when I play support, I know all the timings and I can stack. And I go get my own XP. And the carry is not hindered by me in lane. But nobody else understands when I'm forced to play carry. Mm. Nobody else understands.
Of course, this option is not available to support players because support players are never playing 1v9. They're usually failures.
That's my experience. Everybody but me, pretty much a failure.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to think about the way people play Dota and what's holding them back, and the obvious answer is other people. The other victory condition is, have you ever played Civilization?
I've played Civilization 1 through 6.
So I was thinking, you know how Civilization has those, like, other economic kind of win conditions, right?
Yes.
So this one is called the Moon Victory.
Okay.
So now you can use Moon Shards on your Ancient. If you use 20 Moon Shards on your Ancient, the shards will combine to form a mini moon, which your Ancient will hurl at the other Ancient and destroy it, winning the game. You have to have destroyed their Tier 1 and Tier 2 towers first, though. You can't just ignore the game and farm.
So, okay. So it's basically a economic victory in that you need 80,000 gold.
Yes.
To do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really give you any, it's kind of on theme, you know, it doesn't power up your ancient at all. It's this sink you have to actually dedicate resources into, and it will have to be a decision. I like it. It kind of puts a timer on the game. In terms of, it probably can't go past, you know, 3 hours maybe anymore. So I kind of like it.
And you can see people perhaps picking, like, an alchemist or something and drafting for this strategy.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not going to open Excel. I was literally typing Excel, but I'll restrain myself for now. I was trying to figure out how long it would take, actually. You know, if you did some sort of 4-protect-1 strat.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to work it. Tweak the numbers a little so that we can we get the outcome we desire when we put this in.
Well, the question is it actually better to do 4-protect-1 or is it better to do 3-protect-2 because 2 people farming?
Or 2-protect-3 or just 5-person free for all?
Because
they can only kill, you know, 2 people maybe if you're split.
It's true, but there are only so many creeps on the map.
Surely you have an idea to fix this.
I don't actually. Do you?
Put more creeps on the map, or
brilliant.
That's the obvious answer. Make the map bigger.
Make it 2 layers like our new Dota keyboard.
Exactly. It's going to be on theme, so you can have I don't know. You could have like a subterranean. I don't like the idea. You know, I think Nick on this podcast before has had some stupid ideas about having like tunnels under the map. It just seems very. It seems very League of Legends to me.
Like, what is this? In a way that Amor?
Exactly. What you could have 2 levels, and on the bottom level, you could have some subterranean stuff and then some just regular stuff. And then on the second level, you could have, you know, some sort of treetop layer, like some sort of Ewok hideout thing on part of the map. And then it would also just have another base layer. So you have, you know, you have some some dynamic spots on the map, I would guess. Mm. It's not just, oh, you have an underground and you have an above ground.
And if you jump from the top to the bottom, obviously that first hit coming down, you deal increased damage.
Mm-hmm. But you also would take damage unless, you know, I guess Monkey King wouldn't. It depends on your hero.
That makes sense.
Coddle, if you have the Pegasus equipped, you would be okay. Mm-hmm. Zeus is a god. He probably wouldn't take fall damage.
You know, that's one of the things that has always bothered me is the idea that our cosmetics are just cosmetics, right? They're not affecting the game balance.
Yeah. I guess it would somewhat be a balance thing, but just affect the game somehow, you know? Yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be, oh, it's a buff. It's pay to win. It's just, you know, okay, Cuddle doesn't take fall damage here. But, you know, maybe he's slower or his model gets wider because it has to accommodate the wings of the Pegasus. You know,
no, of course. It's a trade-off. Like everything in Dota, there's nothing that's actually stronger. It's just various
things.
That's
the beauty
that
of it. Everything has to be optimized.
Except for the Satyr Tormentor. That was kind of too strong. But we fixed it.
Okay.
Do you have some ideas, Serge, or should I continue?
I have some good hero ideas for later. I've mostly been... You're, I guess, thinking a little bigger than me. My focus is a little narrower in that I want to bring... I have two heroes to bring you later. So.
Oh, my goodness. I only have the one. I'll go ahead and get my items out of the way then. They're fairly simple. One of them costs 1,000 gold and causes all gold you gain to become reliable gold. It's called direct deposit.
This is one of the more obscure mechanics of Dota 2, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always clear how to get reliable gold in certain situations. I just haven't looked at it in a while, honestly. It's been one of the things I look at the least since the changes to buyback and all have stopped for the most part. But it seems pretty good. It's only 1,000 gold. I mean, I don't know. It's a trade-off because that's 1,000 gold you're not spending on items to get you more farm or survivability. But over the long term, I feel like it would scale even more than Midas. You would probably literally get more gold from this than Midas if you died 5 times in the game.
Exactly. It's an investment in your own incompetence.
Exactly. It's an insurance policy.
That's a good idea. I should invent an insurance policy.
Yeah. I mean, how about every time... Oh, actually. Every time you die before you buy this item, the cost increases by 200 gold.
That's a good idea.
Because, you know, if you're a driver who gets in frequent accidents, your rates are going to be higher, right? So in the same way, if you die a lot, then the shopkeeper is not going to just sell you this thing at the base rate. He knows that he should have to charge you 2,000 gold.
Obviously, it'll also go up based on various other logical factors like your income and your age. Obviously, younger people are more likely to get in accidents.
Yeah, but all the heroes who are male and under 24, I think the price will be 2,000 gold.
That makes
sense.
Until
they get, you know, to a higher level, I guess, which would signify aging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That all makes sense to me.
Very logical.
Now, what is the most OP item in Dota, Serge?
The Clarity.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed how many pros or how many clarities, how many pros are buying? It is insane. We have to figure out how to nerf clarity.
Oh, that's a sign of how balanced. If people buy things a lot, that means it's balanced.
That's an analysis.
That's why the most OP item in the game is the Dagon.
The what?
The Dagon.
Dagon. Yes. Yeah, that one. Cool.
Which is why I have invented the Nogad.
The Nogad, okay, I like it. You've reversed it.
It looks like it has the same icon as a Dagon. So if your enemy clicks on you, it looks like a Dagon. But it's actually the anti-Dagon. It Dagons anyone who uses a Dagon with no cooldown.
Mango, I'm sorry. I don't know if you can hear my dog. Mango, hold on. Would you like to say hi to the podcast? Say hi, Mango. Okay, go away. Sorry about the interruption. No. Okay. So just anybody who uses a Dagon?
Mm-hmm. Including a teammate or yourself. Teammate?
Okay. Oh, so if you buy a Nogad and a Dagon.
You could deny yourself.
You could deny yourself. Is that an expensive item?
4,000 gold for the level 1 and then recipes to upgrade. It's the same recipe as the Dagon.
So why would you buy it? I guess it. I don't know. Your teammates are probably unlikely to buy a Dagon. Like, if you're a Pugna, chances are you might be the only one who would actually buy a Dagon. So maybe it would be good as a counter. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me for it to be the same amount of gold.
Haven't you seen those games where everyone buys a Dagon?
I mean, we had one of those when I was playing with Blitz and everybody and Kevin, but not regularly.
You must be shadow banned. You must be playing some shadow banned games of Dota. If you're playing main Dota, everybody buys Dagons.
Okay.
It's a real problem.
It's a plague, I guess. I appreciate you at least, you know, coming up with a solution. I like it.
It's also it's almost as much of a plague as that talent for Venomancer that makes all plague wards shoot Dagons. That's messed up.
All plague wards shoot Dagons. I love that talent. It's goofy, you know?
It might need a little nerfing, but it is interesting.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have any other items for us?
I don't, you know, until we go to my hero, that's the summation of my ideas.
I see. Well, it's a little funny that you talk about a Venomancer. So, you know, I knew a little bit beforehand, I think. Yeah, it was yesterday that I was sitting around and I saw my signal in the sky that I was going to be on the podcast, and I was a little unprepared. Like I said, I wasn't really thinking as grand of a scale as you, but in terms of, you know, developing Dota 2 and, you know, growing the game into the future, I actually I wanted to go find some pros to sit down with, and I couldn't do that. So instead I saw some, I guess you could call it B-tier talent. And
Arteezy, got it.
Oh boy, that is savage. All the Artur fans are gonna rip you apart. He has something a little Venomancer adjacent for us. So without any further ado, I'm gonna throw it over to Surge.
But you're
Hey Surge, thank you. This is also Surge. I'm here on location in the outback here in Australia. I figured, you know, while we're in this post-TI slump, I would go ahead and just take a sec to look at some of the personalities of Dota 2 that we don't often get to hear from or might not even know about. So today I'm here with Saul Shaloner. You'll know him as Blue Thigh. He's the brother of Paul Shaloner, Red Eye. Well, yeah, you know. Why don't you go ahead and take over? How are you doing, Saul?
I am doing real great after the recovery. Had a bit of an accident a while ago. That's why me and Paul weren't there at TI back in August.
Oh, yeah, we were just talking off air. You got a nasty little bite there on your leg.
Yeah, no, we headed over to the US a bit early, and I wanted to go see that mountain thing with the heads you guys got up there in South Dakota. I figured it might be a nice sight, and got bit by one of them rattlers up there. It's pretty bad wound.
At Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, that's the one, man. Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I didn't know we had rattlesnakes at Mount Rushmore. I'll take your word for it. Okay. There was a big controversy because I believe it was Chobra.
Chobra, that guy.
Oh, yeah. He was hosting the panel there at the final day. I know, you know, your brother was there at the event, but I'm sure he wanted to be with you. You know, you wanted to have your family with you while you, you know, digested that snake you had to eat after it bit you.
Yeah, it's actually a old standing Aussie tradition there. You know, you got the snake bites you, so it's only proper that you bite and then eat the snake.
Yeah, I mean, I there's some sort of dog thing where, you know, you bite the dog ear to get it to respect you or something very strange. I don't know how you guys do it there. But yeah, I mean, there was a big controversy. I mean, I know I, for one, was disappointed. So, you know, hopefully we get to see you next year. You know, I mean, you guys' content is always good. Well, people probably... I at least didn't really know what you did. So, you know, while I'm here, why don't you go ahead and explain what you actually, what you do for Paul?
Oh, yeah, so Paul's a really good public face. He's a good speaker. He's got, you know, proper wit. You know, his timing really good. But he's absolutely terrible when it comes to coming up with jokes and, you know, where to lead the conversation. So most of that stuff we actually script beforehand. I've actually, you know, got quite a bit of experience doing some creative writing, and I've been working in, like, production and the TV shit for quite some time now, and so I hope I'm right most of this material that we work in there.
Yeah, I was surprised to do that too.
It comes down to a lot of cue cards from off screen. To be perfectly, it's kind of like that Ron Burgundy thing. He just reads anything that's up on the teleprompter.
Anyways, so the real reason I'm here, you know, we were talking numbers before. I'm trying to figure out what Dota personalities besides the pros want in Dota 2. And so, you know, you said, you know, with all your writing experience, you've got a little pet project here for us that you'd like to share.
Yeah. We've been working on a bit of a, me and Paul been spitballing back and forth on a hero concept that we think it might shake up the game just a little bit. Not in the same way that techies did, where it's just a fucking snooze and a bore, but, it's a bit unique in some of the things. It tries to build off of some of the stuff Pangolier added.
As long as it's not building off of what of Grimstroke did, I'm not sure if you've played a lot of ranked Dota when Grimstroke came out. It was not the most pleasant experience.
Oh yeah, that tendril spell is there. That's a good one.
Yeah. Anyways, would you like to share your hero concept with
us? Yeah, sure. Why not? I guess we'll start on with the lore. Character's called Vignomancer. Vignomancer.
I think I was gonna say in English. I apologize. Over here, I guess our Midwestern accent, we'd call it a Vignomancer. I think. I don't know French very well, but go ahead and give us the lore for Vignomancer.
Alrighty then. So, abandon the brambles that surround the gardens of the Gleaming City. Remus grew up living a harsh and impoverished life, and while the ivory towers of the Gleaming City loomed high overhead, always within his sight, they'd always forever remain far from his reach. He lived a difficult life, and Remus made the best of it. The gift of a green thumb quickly propelled him up the ranks in the fields, and at the age of 14, very young, he was granted the rank of Master Vieron. Vieron. And not long after, his vineyard became the talk of the Gleaming City. Despite his vineyard's popularity, though, his social caste still placed him at the bottom of the totem pole. Where his resentment and his envy continued to grow. Until one day, Remus' resentment finally boiled over, and he began to cultivate something grander, something darker. A crop that would show all of the Gleaming City just how powerful his hate could be. For his first spell, I call it a Constricting Stinger. It's got a bit of that vector aiming from the Pangolier, and it can actually hit two targets at once. If it hits the one, it can bounce over to the other. Or if you properly angle it right. The particle effect for it's a bit of a grapevine, so it actually like shoots out a grapevine, and it passes through an enemy and it roots them. And if you actually hit the two targets with it, it actually pulls them together, kind of, and it bundles them up, so they're both right next to each other. You know, it deals some damage, deals a root. Cooldown, it's reasonable. It's not too long, too overpowered. So moving on to his next skill, the W. It's a Bramble Blast. It's a point target, you know, single person. It's a damage over time. It looks like a big old ball of freaking thorns being launched straight at you. And, you know, you get a poison, you get a slow, and, but the way the poison and the slow work, the debuff, it, you know, most of the time it runs, it'll dissipate over time, but instead, it only dissipates if you stand still for a certain amount of time. So if you're running away, you're gonna be slowed, take a bunch of damage. You know, no one ever wants to stand still in a game of Dota.
That's an interesting trade-off. Very nice.
And moving on to his E, I figured it might be interesting to bring in another ward type ability that is placeable. Yeah, similar, okay. Similar to Techie's Minds in a way. It works a bit more like trees.
Okay.
So, a placeable ward unit. And when it procs, it goes off in a kind of like a tripwire type straight line, and it applies a small mini sun to the hit unit. And it also applies a concussion disorientation debuff. And it sort of warps the player's screen a little bit, plays some ringing sounds, you know, reverses the mouse movements and makes them slower. You know, different type of debuff.
It reverses the mouse movements?
Yeah, you know, left, right, right, up. Yeah, your toilet goes from clockwise to counterclockwise. And here's how ultimate ability that Grapes of Wrath, you know, give it that real biblical like lore type thing. It works very similar to his Q. Looks a lot like it, but it can hit more than just the two targets. It's still the skill shotty, you shoot it at, but you can actually hit multiple, like five. You could potentially get the whole team if you get one of them vacuums from the Darkseer. And it works so similar, I guess, in a way to how Luna's, Eclipse works. It bases it a bit off of Lucent Singularity, so some of the root and the damage is based off that, but it also applies...
You mean Lucent Beam.
Yeah, Lucent Beam. But it also applies a bit of a thing called Wrath Counter, you know, Grapes of Wrath, everyone gets angry, whatever. So, if you're within auto-attack range of a unit that's on your team and you've been affected by it, your character's going to try to auto-attack it for a while, similar to how Winter Wyvern's thingy works, except you can still get damage taken to you.
So it's based on proximity. You just attack the nearest friendly unit. Basically.
Correct. It could be a creep, it could be a hero, it's whatever the whole spell hits. Yeah, so I think that's really all I got for you on the design. And I'm more of a writer, so I can't really conceptualize any of the art to like how he's going to look or whatnot, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a solid concept. I think I'm going to... I got a little bit before I have to fly back for the podcast. I might come up with something myself. I'll think about it on the ride home. The flight home, I guess. I'm not going to ride. Do you ride an airplane? Okay, well, thank you, Saul. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on. No one ever brings me on these things because they don't really know I exist.
We'll catch you later.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, that was my interview with Blue Thigh. And that was his hero concept, Venumancer.
Now, this is what I'm talking about. This is the problem with Dota. Underappreciated, incredible talents sitting in the shadows of their brothers that the world doesn't know about. You, me, Serge, Saul, how many are there?
It's impossible to know when we don't know who they are. I think, by definition.
You know, that's a real thinker, what you just said.
Mm-hmm. I can't put it in my spreadsheet if there is no data.
I have always thought that the thing that Dota was lacking the most was a reference to classical literature, so I'm very, very happy.
Indeed.
With this idea.
Yeah. It somewhat fits the Venomancer theme, I suppose, in that it's got a bunch of shit that can get thrown at you and is annoying. So I'd like to see Venomancer in the game. I would vote for him.
Seems like a very strong disabler, perhaps a roamer, perhaps an offlaner.
Mm-hmm. Something to... shake things up a little. It feels, while we're waiting here for 7.20 to be released by your brother, who I assume just has to be fucking off somewhere, laying back on a tropical island, drinking from his bag of money.
Last time I saw my brother, he was programming a robotic arm positioned over the button to deploy 7.20, and it automatically descended, but every time someone posted on Reddit, it went up an inch.
Oh, this is some sort of, like, what's that Greek god? Dionysus? No. The one where...
Are you referring to Prometheus with the crow?
No, but actually, let's change it to be more on theme. It's like Prometheus with the crow, every time he's going to escape. Or I don't quite remember my Greek...
He's tearing out his liver, I believe.
Yes. Basically, we are tearing out the liver of Ice Frog, and he probably deserves it.
Well, you know what? In his absence, I have come up with another new hero idea. I want to hear yours, but I will break things up with this idea.
I don't think you will, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because I was inspired, actually, by Blue Thigh. And today I bring for you Vinepur. You see, a vigneron deals with wines, but a vintner deals with wines. The lore. For time immemorial, the Order of the Tower has worshipped the god Narcissus, ally of Zeus, renowned for his profound vanity and immeasurable beauty. Clarice's family had, for generations, been in charge of the production and storage of the holiest of sacrifices, the wines produced by the grapes grown in the fields irrigated by the rain caused by the good graces of Narcissus. The balance was always maintained. Each year, 1,000 gallons of the finest wine was sacrificed, and in return, the people of Rhone were blessed with regular rains and pleasant weather. One year, it was finally time for Clarice to take over the family role of serving as the priestess to perform the annual sacrifice. But, unbeknownst to her, the year's crop had been infiltrated by noble rot, and the sacrificial wine was secretly spoilt. Narcissus, in his rage, struck down and destroyed her village. And so, Clarice the Vinepur, definitely didn't misspeak there, sets out to reclaim the honor of her family and her people, and to look for revenge against the vain evil god who struck down her family.
That's a really somber story. I hope they find it. Oh wait, they're a hero. You've got a spell concept.
I figured.
Sorry.
Yeah. You know.
Sorry, I was caught up in the story a little bit.
I know it was masterfully written. Definitely not while we just listened to that segment. So Clarice's skills here. Let's start off with her Q, Batonnage. Every 400 down to 150, damage dealt by Vinepur grants a charge of Sir Lee. When activated, Batonnage releases a deadly swarm of undead yeast spirits that swirl in a large AoE around her, damaging and slightly pushing and, like, slowing enemy units hit. And the max charges, the damage, and the push and AoE all scale with levels. So it's kind of like a chaotic damaging element.
My goodness.
Her W, Cabernet Command. Enemies must stop and appreciate the matured tannins, acid, and dark black fruit of one of Vinepur's finest bottles of Cab Sav. This is basically a point-targeted stun. It's almost unstable concoction, except, you know, you don't have to wait for it. I figured, you know, she needs some sort of classical stun, and we really haven't seen many point-target stuns. I mean, for good reason. You don't want to saturate, but I felt like it was time. And it fits the rest of the character, which continues with her E. This is a passive. K-Sera, Sera. Damaging Vinepur above a certain threshold causes her to ooze a hearty, spicy red with notes of wild raspberry and slate, which damages enemies who stand in the area. And this ooze of wine lasts for 30 seconds on the ground, and you have more intense and larger wine, like amounts, will be spilled based on how much damage she takes. It also gives a little bit of status resist and speed to Vinepur at each level. Think of it as almost a Batrider-like thing. A D, this is something I added. It's a Pinot Greed. Vinepur gains a charge on bottle at levels 3, 18, 13, and then 20 through 25, so that at 25, her bottle would have 12 charges. Once you get to level 13, this spell, however, morphs into Chug, 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 and it can be activated to consume all charges on a bottle at once, but it will put it on cooldown for 5 minutes. I figured, you know, it kind of fits the wine theme. And so what better way to be on theme than to deal with a bottle? And finally, her ultimate, a fine vintage. Clarice the Vinepur is going to allow you to take a sip of her ultimate creation. No, wait. You are about to become it. A rift in time forms in the target area, and casks from the ancient lost cellar of Amontillado shoot out and rain down in the area for 6 to 10 seconds. The casks damage, mini-stun, and apply Syrah in the area around them. Think of it almost as a sort of magical Monkey King ultimate, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question.
Yes.
With this ability with the bottle, is there any way you could perhaps use this for bottles you give to allies?
I could think of ways that could work, but then how do you deal with the mechanics? Like, if somebody gives Vinepur their bottle, does it instantly gain the 12 charges and then they can just give it back? Or do you have a vision for this?
I am not. I think what I would have happen is if Vinepur passes by you while you're in the fountain, you automatically within a certain range, you automatically get filled up to her max. And then if you do like a self cast, if you do like Alt plus your bottle key, it will do the chug, chug, chug.
So you can give bottles to her to chug.
Oh, no, she can allow her allies to chug theirs as well.
Like in an AoE?
Yes.
Basically. I don't hate that, actually. I like that as, you know, I like having spells interact with your allies in that way.
It's not good to drink alone. You should be a social drinker.
Yeah, you know. I mean, hey, you know, she can appreciate her bottle in the middle of the woods while farming the jungle, while her team pushes. Mm-hmm. But she probably shouldn't. That's a valid assessment. Thank you.
So it seems like what you get from her is I assume you would probably build her tanky, and she would be a very disruptive, like, in the middle of a team fight kind of tanky character.
That was my vision, but like we've seen with Monkey King, you never know. You know, tank, DPS, because Batonage, it has things around you. It's not a bursty spell, but it is disruptive. And then almost in the same like Batrider way, as I mentioned, you know, Sera just kind of is a nuisance. And then the status resist does lend itself to a more tanky-ish style build, almost in the same way that Razor has with his does he still have the movement speed buff on his E?
I believe he does.
Okay, I will believe you. Almost in that way.
Interesting. I wonder. I would be curious to see this in the hands of players and see what becomes of her.
I hope to see it soon, yes.
Well, I do have one more idea for you. It is interesting that our friend Blue Thigh had the idea of making a hero based on wards, because I don't know if it's possible to create a hero more ward-based than mine.
I'm apprehensive, at best.
The great artificer Romthrell was a master of golem creation, but he always seemed to bump into one problem. Information. The golems had terrible senses and seemed clueless as to how to make use of the information they did have. In a flash of inspiration, the artificer thought to make a golem entirely out of wards. Clearly this would give it superior observation, and then he could work on the problem of its intelligence. Little did he know that by combining so many half-sentient plants together, by the way, the lore of wards is that they're half-sentient plants, the resulting creation was quietly brilliant and ill-disposed to take orders.
Yeah, that's true.
His success far greater than he could have ever imagined, Romthrell died happy at the hands of his greatest creation. Then the ward golem, the visionary, strode out into the night in search of problems to observe. This is my new hero, the visionary.
That is some honestly solid lore. I mean, we heard, I at least listened to the episode of Bottlecore where they read the Grimstroke lore. God. definitely not, you know, your work.
I'm ashamed to say it was. However, there were circumstances. Ice Frog and I had been drinking a lot. And then he created a list of words I was not allowed to use when writing lore while I was very drunk. I'm sorry for what I did, but it wasn't entirely my fault.
Would you like to use this platform as a place to admit that you did in fact plagiarize a Harry Potter fan fiction, perhaps? Or are you not at that stage of grief yet?
Look, it was my Harry Potter fanfic.
It's not plagiarism. Okay. What other series do you have fan fictions for?
Star Wars, Star Trek, My Little Pony, and, of course, Rumble Roses for the Xbox 360.
I definitely have seen that game.
Let's get on to our spells, shall we, our kit?
Okay.
So the cue of the Visionary is called Eyes and Ears. It's a skill shot, but the enemy cannot see the projectile. The enemy only sees the animation of the Visionary snapping its fingers. Okay. The skill shot will hit the first enemy that it collides with, and it causes that unit and its commands that it receives to be visible to the Visionary for 15 seconds. The enemy does not know if they've been hit or not. So, for example, if you were to hit an enemy Dragon Knight with this, the Dragon Knight would know that you cast it, but would not know if you'd hit or not. And then you would see the Dragon Knight's move commands and attack commands for the next 15 seconds, including into Fog of War.
So what does that exactly mean? Is it like the old Bounty Hunter track? Is it like current track? Or is it you just see the commands?
It's like current track that you can see their location, and then you can also see the little click effect of where they click.
That's subtle. I kind of like that, actually.
It can then also be detonated with a second press of Q. The cooldown doesn't start until either it detonates or 15 seconds have passed and it expires. Initially, the damage is very small, but after 5 seconds, if the Visionary is within 500 units of the enemy, the damage increases. So it rewards you for dropping it on an enemy and then using the information as to where they're moving to get close.
Come on, get close.
Our second ability is called Scry Havoc. That's your W, of course. Mm-hmm. Whenever a hero dies under ward vision, the Visionary gets a charge up to 12. 3 charges can be spent to temporarily turn a ward into an invincible mini-tower. Temporarily.
How temporarily are we talking about?
30 seconds.
Oh, okay. That's very good, actually. You could do some... Can you kill it easily? I guess not, if it's
It's invincible
tower.
During the time.
Oh, that's... You did say invincible. That is very Dota, actually. Because... You can have it where, you know, you turn something that's up on a high ward spot into a tower, and then that could possibly... Yes, hello, Mango. Turn the tides of a team fight, but you could also almost cheesily do it at your own base. So if you have 12 charges and you save up 4 wards, it's another thing you have to... It's a trade-off you have to save. Then you could suddenly have, like, 5 towers in your mid lane for 30 seconds.
It also is notable that you don't gain charges while the Visionary is dead, but you do gain charges from friendly heroes dying under ward vision as well.
Oh, okay. I guess, you know, everybody should just... Yes, hello. You should just suicide under wards, and then there's some good strats you can have with this.
Well, there are even more strats when you combine the E ability. Is Mango going to be okay?
He just wants attention very badly. Normally he does this, you know, whenever I'm streaming, but he can tell when I'm on the podcast as well. Yes, good boy.
The E ability is called Please Observe. This ability turns a target creep, non-ancient, into an observer ward for 30 seconds. Once time is up, the unit dies with no gold or XP bounty. It has fairly long range.
So it can't move, it's just a ward?
Right.
Okay.
Again, you can use this on your own creeps or enemy or neutral.
Oh, or neutral. Oh, that's pretty nice.
The final ability, the ultimate ability, is called the Shattering of Lies. For the next 18 seconds, every unit on the Visionary's team has True Sight.
Ooh.
Cooldown of 140, 120, 100 seconds.
This is the, I guess, the anti-Mirana ultimate.
Yes. In fact, has the same cooldown and duration.
I was wondering. Yes. That is a solid hero design. I would actually, you know, add you to the ranks of Venomancer and Vindpur.
I was just thinking, you know, the wards have such a stale role in Dota.
Mm-hmm.
That what if there was someone who could really make them into something new?
Unless I'm forgetting something, they've almost stayed the same for the full time of Defense of the Ancients, unless I'm wrong. I mean, has much really changed? I know the way in which you can purchase them has changed. You know, they were bundled at one point, and I'm sure the stock has changed, but...
Well, the other things that have changed are, of course, that it now has an indicator when you place it as far as a vision area. It no longer has HP, it just has a set number of hits, and also you can no longer miss wards.
Yeah.
Remember when you could miss wards?
I do remember. Yeah, that was... They were going to have some sort of ability to remove wards, but they replaced it with just the lack of ability to miss.
Also, I guess the Tango and Culling Blade for wards thing was added.
Ah, that's true. Yeah. But it feels like that's, you know, that's like updating wards, kind of just like patching them to fix the current game rather than any sort of new idea. What if, maybe it's just the visionary, we can possibly expand it. What if you could use items on wards? So it might not make sense, but you could hex a ward and it would remove the vision for the duration of the hex. You could, I guess, Atos a ward so that it could not move, which is relevant because... You can get four-staffed under Atos, I believe. What if you could use four-staffs on wards, at least as the visionary?
I see no reason why you couldn't.
Right? It seems logical to me.
What if you see an enemy support going to destroy your ward and you're like, I can stop them, but I don't have enough time? So you use your ward.
I didn't even think of that interaction, but it makes so much sense. You should be able to Dagon enemy wards so that instead of it taking two hits, it just instantly dies. What are some other items? You should be able to Abyssal a ward, I guess. That doesn't make much sense.
You should be able to Amulet a ward so that it can tank Roche.
Or, you know, it takes three or four hits to kill in a more logical answer. I guess Clarity Award. I guess they wouldn't really need a salve. You could bottle a ward. What if you could actually put a ward in a bottle? I feel like that might encourage mid players to buy more wards.
What would happen if they used the bottle while the ward was in it?
Yeah, I don't know the mechanics of that, actually. I'm trying. I don't know. I guess maybe you have to...
You could have it so that it places a ward immediately at your current location, because there would be no visible sign. It would just be like you were drinking your bottle, but in fact you'd subtly placed a ward.
That's good. The enemy can't see, because it would be in a bottle, you know, like if you have something in a bottle with a beverage in it, if the beverage is not clear, even if it's just a little translucent, you wouldn't be able to tell if there was a ward in there. So I kind of like that as like a stealth ward activity.
And of course, you should be able to use BKB on a ward.
Nobody buys Black King Bar. But
you're right. I'm sorry. Mystery King Bar. You should be able to buy a Mystery King Bar.
A Mystery King Bar. Yeah, I heard your idea last time. It was... I'm open Dynamic. To the concept. Dynamic. That's the word I'm using. Yes.
What would happen if a ward bought Aghanim's Scepter?
I think it should become a mini tower. I believe Alchemist should be able to use his Aghanim's ability to give other people's ags on a ward, and it makes it into a tower.
You know, it just makes sense.
I mean, 4,200 gold, that's not a cheesy strat. It's viable, and it is balanced.
Okay, I'm into it.
Excellent.
Serge, do we have anything else for the people?
So I've heard, you know, since the last time we came on, they started doing some sort of... I don't know, a food segment based on Eternal Envy. I'm not quite sure of the lore behind Jackie's Chow.
Oh, yeah. He asked me about frozen food last time.
Yeah, I guess, should we do one of those?
Wendy's serves square burgers, and burgers are better when they're square.
You do seem like a Wendy's kind of guy, Ice Fraud. So I made a noodle stir fry this week. I finally went to the Asian market somewhat near to me, and I picked up a bunch of ingredients, including fresh noodles, which I have not had in a while, just haven't made them or purchased them. But fresh Chinese noodles, they're like Shanghai something style of noodles. They're very good. You only have to cook them for like a minute or a minute and a half in boiling water. And so I cooked them for a minute. And then I had a bunch of vegetables lying around, including, let's see, probably green onions, bean sprouts, peppers of various color, sugar snap peas. I think it was about it. And so I chopped all those up to prep them. I put them in a bowl, and then I had chicken thighs, and I cut up a lot of chicken thighs very thinly, or I guess into very small pieces rather. And I stir fried the chicken. I had to do it in two batches. So I just put a wok or a large pan you could use over the highest heat I have. You let it get ridiculously hot, and then you put in oil. I use peanut oil for the taste in this case, and I had to do my chicken in two batches because I had a lot of it. And you just kind of stir fry it until it gets nicely browned to however you want. Because it's so thin, it's going to cook pretty quickly. So once you see the outside is cooked, you don't have to worry about the inside, which is nice. And so I cooked my chicken in two batches, and then I put in my vegetables, stir fried those for 2 to 4 minutes. You don't really want it to get soggy, so don't let it cook for too long. And then I took everything out, and so I had my cooked chicken and my cooked vegetables in one bowl, and I had boiled my noodles. You drain them really well, really, really well, and then put them back in like the pot you used to boil them, and toss them with a little bit of toasted sesame oil to make sure they don't stick. Heat up your wok again, and then put a little bit more oil in there and stir fry your noodles just on their own for a minute or two to get some color on those. Add back the other ingredients, and then I did kind of a Chinese-Korean style stir-fry, so I had hoisin sauce, I used gochujang, which is like Korean red pepper paste, I believe, and then some soy, some garlic, some mirin, like Japanese rice wine with sugar, basically, and then I mixed those all up, and then I poured it over everything in the wok, tossed it together, waited 30 seconds, and that was very good. And I think I'm going to have to make more noodle stir fries in the future because I've never really done it before. I think I did try once, but my noodles stuck to the wok or the pan I was using to fry because I hadn't tossed them with oil before, and I don't think my pan was hot enough, but it's not actually hard. I would actually highly recommend doing this.
So I think a lot of those ingredients sound good, but I'm a little confused.
Okay.
I don't cook very much myself, but...
Right, you talked of your love of frozen food.
But when I do, all these recipes talk about, like, you know, like pots and pans and heating them up and stuff, right?
Yes.
But when you put them in the microwave gets really upset, and I don't understand.
I'm getting a call.
Oh, okay. I guess we should probably wrap this up then.
Yeah. I'll let it go to voicemail for now, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'll get through this closing stuff.
Okay.
Hang on. I got a paper. I may be sabotaging the show, but there's no need to sabotage it, if you know what I'm saying. It's...
Ha 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 ha. Ha 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 ha.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Hold on. A key part of this. This week, also, I got duck eggs. Someone I know from my work sells duck eggs. They raise ducks and they sell duck eggs. I have not had duck eggs before, to my knowledge, or perhaps far in the past. Maybe I have. They're basically bigger eggs and they taste eggier.
Hmm.
And they are delicious, at least to me. You know, my review of duck eggs is at least 8 out of 8. They're a little richer, but like they're larger, so it makes sense anyways. I really like the taste, and I actually, with some of the leftover noodles I had that I hadn't stir-fried, I basically quickly scrambled the eggs in a wok and then stir-fried them with the noodles later and added some other sauces. That was very excellent. So, bonus Jackie's Chow for you there. You could probably even do those in the microwave, but we'll have a talk later.
I feel like the shell would explode, but we can talk about it. There's some music on this show. I think it says it's by Jeffrey Pomodi Bryce. It's the Rhythms of Rift Shatter Ruins. Thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey Pomodi, for the use of this music. Thank you to Ashley Svimi Ryan for the podcast art. And then if you want to find these people on Twitter, if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm not on Twitter. Don't be a fool. But if you want to find the regular hosts on Twitter, you can go to @6detmar or @caesarsalad. I think there'll be some show notes or something. It looks like that's everything.
I think we have some ideas here. I think I've roped you in, tamed some of your stupidity from your announcement of this nonsense last time. But, you know, I'm glad I came. I don't know about you, but
you know, sometimes I get a little cooped up. I get a little rash. Sometimes my ideas are perhaps. I don't think they're bad ideas. It's not bad ideas. It's just sometimes Dota's not quite ready yet.
That's true. Some games are born with greatness, and some games don't get patches.
But until we patch the greatness into Dota 2, good night.
Sure.